welcome to another edition of the True North Country Comics Podcast, dedicated to promote Canadian comic book creators and supporters. I'm John Swinimer. On this episode, I chat with Dennis Slater about his talk in partnership with the Chinook Country Historical Society at the Calgary Library about comic books and comic strips during the First and Second World Wars. Dennis is a jazz journalist for arts and entertainment magazines, museum curator at the Glenbow Museum in Calgary, and was curator for an exhibit that dealt with censorship in Canada in the 1950s, and that led to his interest in comic books during the World Wars. In our chat, we talk about wartime comic book heroes, from World War I's Young Canada Boys to World War II's Captain Daring. During the First World War, Canadian children thrilled to the adventures of the Young Canada Boys, the Brighton Boys, and the Belgian Twins, to name a few. By the Second World War, Canadian superhero comic book characters were battling enemies overseas. Dennis talked about censorship in Canadian comic books in the late 40s and 50s, about the ban on U.S. comic books during World War II, which led to the rise of Canadian comic book companies, the regional aspect of Canadian comic books, John Bell's book Invaders from the North, and how Iron Man was first a Canadian creation. We also talk about Ivan Kocmarek, his upcoming book Heroes of the Homefront, and which has more than 300 pages of history of Canadian comic books and World War II era from Bell Features and artists. Before we go further, I encourage you to like this podcast wherever good podcasts are found, and definitely check out the TrueNorthCountryComics.com website. Like us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, so you can discover a lot more information about Canadian comic book creators and supporters. And now, here's my chat with Dennis Slater about the Canadian comic books during First and Second World Wars.
Well, so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, first of all, your background. And it says on the site that you're an author, educator, music journalist as well.
Yes, that's correct. I wrote jazz journalism for arts and entertainment magazines for a number of years. Still do occasionally, but I was writing pretty regularly for a long time. I've written a book on big band jazz in Calgary in the 1940s and the 1930s. I worked as a museum curator for many years at the Glenbow Museum in Calgary. And the road that got me onto comic books, aside from having read them as a kid, was I was a curator for an exhibit in 2006 that dealt with censorship in Canada in the 1950s. And it was called Banned in Canada, and among other things, I found myself looking at the controversy that surrounded comic books in Canada and also in the United States in the late 40s and the early 50s, and so I got very interested in comic books in general, but more specifically, what was happening for the comic book industry in Canada during the time of the Second World War. And so I was teaching a course at the University of Calgary on comic books in Canada and Canadian content during the Second World War for a while, and out of that grew a couple of lectures that I've delivered specific to the Second World War time period. But the one that I'm delivering on the 24th at the Public Library is going to cover both the First and Second World War. Now, First World War, we're not talking about comic books, we're talking about children's literature, and we're talking about comic strips, but by the time we arrive at the time period before the Second World War, then it's that time when the Canadian government imposed the War Exchange Conservation Act in 1940. And so they placed a ban on certain kinds of periodicals that were coming across the border from the U.S. to Canada.
I'm wondering, why would that be? Why would the government clamp down on that?
There are a couple of things. Apparently, there was a trade deficit with the United States that was growing at the time, and the Canadian government wanted to strengthen our economy. So this action was designed to conserve American dollars in circulation in the Canadian economy. And so apparently that's why they did it. Yeah, that's sort of my
as well. Okay, well, I hope that history doesn't repeat itself.
No, I agree. But the interesting thing about this was the moment that the ban was placed on periodicals, which included not only comic books, but things like the Saturday Evening Post and what would have been leisure time reading for the Canadian public, that was certainly the moment that those things were no longer available in Canada, but it was also an opportunity for Canadian comic book companies to be born.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when that happened, then within that time period, and we're talking about a very small window, we're talking about 1940 through about 1946, when that happened, there were four or five Canadian comic book companies that surfaced. And those comic book companies began to produce Canadian comic book heroes with Canadian-based stories. And the American comics were no longer a competitive source, but it gave the opportunity for Canadian artists, Canadian comic book creators, and story writers to come up with original material. And so there were all kinds of things that surfaced, and it's interesting because of what you're talking about in terms of learning more about Canadian comic book creators and things of that nature, because some of these characters, some of those comics, part of it was that that time period was a short-lived time period between 1940 and 46, and so some of the companies got up and going pretty quickly, but distribution was a bit of a challenge. And some of the comic book heroes that were created were sort of created, and they were around for a while, but then they disappeared very quickly. So in doing research on it, it's a real challenge to find out more about some of these characters. Some we still know, like Novana of the North and Johnny Canuck and things like that,
right,
and Brock Windsor, for that matter. But there were others that had very, very fascinating names. But it's difficult. So you can find information about the creators, you can find information about the artists, and in some cases there was a serendipity in the sense that the creator of the comic book character and the story idea for that character was also the artist.
Right, right.
And
yeah.
And I think that's very cool. And so it means that there was an opportunity. It means that some of the things that were created went on to continue to live in Canadian comic book history. Others kind of disappeared, but I would say that there's a research project in hand for someone to look into additional information on some of those artists.
Right.
Themselves.
Yeah, and I mentioned before how Ivan Kocmarek has his book coming up, Heroes of the Homefront. He's gone and done a lot of research. It's primarily about World War II area with Bell Features artists. I know there's a lot of different publishers that have come and gone, and that was just one he wanted to focus on. But
because there was Anglo-American and Bell Features, and I'm trying to think who else here. Maple Leaf.
Right, Maple Leaf, yes.
And Hillborough Studios, which was in Toronto. And so the stories of each and every one of those, and things like the creation of Triumph Comics and Top Flight Comics, and the titles that were issued under those in the early 40s. That's a fascinating story. When is his book coming out?
It should be out. It's something timed, I guess, late spring, early summer. He did a Kickstarter event started last around Toronto, around the Fan Expo time in September, and it's been going strong. So he reached his goal, and it should be coming out soon.
Good for him.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, this method, the government made this decision saying, that's it, we're stopping everything. Did they give any sort of benefit or funding for any of these new publishers that came along, or was it just on their
own? As far as I know. That I've not seen reference to that, no. I think that there were various people, like with Maple Leaf Publishing, who was in Vancouver, Anglo-American, who was Toronto, and Bell Features, of course, was in Toronto. These were examples where the companies were started by artists, or started by business people who saw an opportunity. So Hillborough Studios, for example, was actually established by three artists in Toronto, and so Adrian Dingle was one of those. Mm-hmm. And Renee, I think.
Yes.
And Andre Kulbach. And that particular company, founded by three artists, then went on to produce Triumph Comics and Top Flight Comics and a bunch of other ones, too. But it's interesting how it starts. And I don't know, and I have not come across anything by way of the government compensating or giving startup funds for any of the comic book businesses that started. That's a good question. I don't know.
So I see by some of the notes on the seminar that you're going to give that it actually started in the First World War, that it was transitioning.
Yeah, because what I'm looking at is I'm looking at the ideas for children's fiction, mm-hmm. and whether that's in the form of comic books that were targeting children as their target demographic, and we have comic books, Second World War vintage, or whether it's children's books and serialized stories from the time of the First World War. And the time of the First World War, there were stories that were designed to assist with some of the home front efforts that were going on in Canada. We had, there was a series of books called The Boy Allies, another series of books called The Boy Aviators. There was one called, what was it called? Somewhere in Canada was the series. And these were all stories that were set either overseas at in a setting of the First World War front, or they were stories that were sent back over here about trying to keep people vigilant and the potential for guarding against spies and things of that nature.
Most of the folks, I mean, you and I remember quite well newspapers. We would get most of the comic strips in there, and it's sort of gone away. It's a lost art. But is that how these things started? Were they in the newspapers of the day? Is that where people would find these comics?
Some of them transitioned to newspapers of the day, yes. And depending on the publication, for example, if some of the publications were in English newspapers or things of that nature, some of them did transition that way. Others were quite literally children's books. Like you would see, this is a very, very early version of things that we would associate with adventure stories like the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or things of that nature.
Right.
And some of the titles, particularly from around the middle of the First World War, from 1915, 1916, some of them like The Big Five Motorcycle Boys. That was the title of this group of boys who found themselves in adventures on the front, overseas, and all kinds of stuff like that. And there was a character, and I think he was an English-based story. His name was Tom Slade, and it was a series of stories, some of which I believe were serialized into comic strip format. Yeah, but mostly children's books at the time of the First World War and, of course, comic strips. But whether or not the comic strips at the time were dealing with the First World War theme and what was going on overseas is another question. I know that there were Mutt and Jeff comics, for example, that did. And I've seen illustrations from some of those specific strips that show them overseas. So.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I remember my mom saying when she's growing up in Newfoundland that she remembers reading Superboy and other comic books. So Newfoundland didn't become part of Canada. It wasn't part of
this. Yeah, no, exactly.
So they would be able to receive the U.S. publications without any regard.
Do you
see this as a regional thing? Like you mentioned, that's depending on the publisher, whether it's Toronto, Vancouver, or wherever, that they could get their own comic books regional.
Yeah, and that's what I've heard, because when I've done the presentations before, one of the feedback elements from visitors and attendees has been, oh, I didn't know that those were around. And so when you consider, if we look at the geography, I mean, we have a couple of companies that started up in Vancouver, three, I guess, that started in Toronto, so that if you were in the Toronto or Vancouver area, depending on the print run for that particular comic book, you would probably have access to it without too much difficulty. But if you were somewhere in the middle of the country, say in Winnipeg or in Regina or even in Calgary, the fact that these were being produced is one thing, but the distribution network would have been more of a challenge, I think.
You mentioned before about censorship, and I don't know, I haven't really thought it quite through, but there was none of that going on during, as you said, the First World War, and then the Second World War. Talked about superhero comic books. It wasn't until after that.
It's after that. It's after the war, and it's the same thing. For example, there's a book that's called The 10-Cent Plague, which David Hajdu wrote a number of years back now, and I use that as one of my textbooks for my students in the comic book course that I taught at the University of Calgary. And it is, that time period is specific. It's post-war. It starts, the controversy begins and really catches hold from 1946, 1947 into the 50s. And if you look at when there were censorship, there were calls for censorship for Canadian comic books, it tends to roll into the early 1950s. So that's a very interesting thing. It's not First World War. It's not Second World War. It's after that.
I know that a lot in the United States, for example, a lot of the comic books cut back because of that. Do you think that was a signal? Do you think that was the sign of comic books, sort of Canadian comic books, sort of dying off? Do you think that was a first step?
Well, I think the first step, particularly in the ones that I look at with Bell Features and Marlboro Comics and Hillboro and those, I think the first step was the moment that the trade barriers were lifted in 1946. So these small comic runs, comic book runs, if it was a small company, and they were small companies, they had a certain degree of success, which is quite heartening. But once the competition presented itself of the return of American comic books, then it was almost impossible for them to continue.
Yeah, it's tough to compete now, with Superman.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to compete with Superman. And I think, too, the challenge is that when we talk about censorship and when we're talking about that kind of controversy surrounding it, surrounding comic books, then people who are comic book publishers, people who are artists for comic books, will look at that climate of opinion that's out there, and they might be dissuaded from continuing to work on a project just because of the circumstances.
Right.
You know, and it makes it hard, because if you are operating on a restricted budget, then you can only produce so much by way of a print run or a product. It's not that it isn't good. It's not that the topic isn't interesting. It's not that the artwork isn't good. It's none of the above. It's that there are other circumstances that are compromising it.
Right.
I would think.
Yeah. Do you think that these characters, like you mentioned Nelvana, I know we're seeing that Captain Canuck has made a resurgence.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a possibility that these superheroes from back in the day could ever make a resurgence into modern day stories?
You know, I would like to think so, because John Bell's book, and if I can just remember the title, hang on a second here.
I think I have it right here. It's
Guardians of the North, is that the one
I
you're
have
talking
a book title called Invaders from the North.
Yeah, and I'm looking at that. That is on my other book.
There you go. Right. That's a good
yeah,
one.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting to look at that, to look at what John Bell has said in a few of his source books and talking about the national superhero in Canadian culture. And when we talk about Johnny Canuck or Nelvana or any of those characters, they're national superheroes. And so maybe those characters in some fashion still have resonance.
Right.
In, you know, if you're refashioned and recreated to meet contemporary circumstances, maybe that market is there.
So there you go. There's a whole market there of characters to be sort of used for modern day purposes. You never know.
Well, I've heard that there's a film, sorry for interrupting you, I've heard that there's a film project for the Brock Windsor character.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be super.
Yeah, what do you think about national superheroes, the ones from back in the day?
Golly, again, I haven't really followed it. I mean, I was amazed to learn Hope Nicholson, actually, from a publisher, put together a book about Nelvana. And I was astonished to learn that she was, you know, predates Wonder Woman.
Yep,
as
she
the
does.
First female superhero comic character, and I thought, wow, that's something that I was totally ignorant about, and most people are.
Yeah, oh, I would agree. I'm sorry I'm interrupting here. You're reminding me of, there was a character created by Vernon Miller, and Vernon Miller was working for Maple Leaf Publishing, and he created a character called Iron Man.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah, and just a sec, because I have, and there's Canada Jack, Dixon of the Mounted, the Invisible Commando, which is one of my faves, Captain Daring, Tang the Wonder Horse, and the Iron Man character. He was the sole survivor of a Polynesian island civilization that was destroyed by an earthquake, and he lives alone in a sunken city, but he has superpowers, and he was indestructible, and he could leap incredible heights. So the first thing that comes to mind for me is when we talk about people leaping incredible heights, it reminds me of being able to leap tall buildings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was Vernon Miller's creation. And it's interesting thing about Vernon Miller was that early in his career as an artist, he had worked for the Disney Corporation.
Ah.
But he was in Vancouver, and when he was in Vancouver, he convinced the publishers for Maple Leaf to take a chance on his comic book ideas, one of which was Iron Man.
Wow. So,
and this is before the one, this is before the Tony Stark, but it's a different character entirely.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Things that people don't know. Canada had it first.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think that this is a fascinating time period when, even though the ban was in place on American periodicals coming into Canada, it was as well an opportunity for Canadian publishers and Canadian comic book artists and those who were creating story ideas. And because it was an opportunity, some people stepped into that situation and created some pretty amazing comic book characters, I think.
Thanks to Dennis for his time and the very interesting topics. You can discover more about the Chinook Country Historical Society at chinookcountry.org and on Twitter at @ChinookCHS. And thanks to you for listening to the True North Country Comics podcast. I invite you to subscribe, like, and comment on the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at True North Comics, on Facebook at facebook.com/TrueNorthCountryComics, and on Instagram at instagram.com/TrueNorthCountryComics. Please send your feedback to info@TrueNorthCountryComics.com. Thanks again for listening, and come back soon for another episode. Bye for now. True North Country Comics podcast is copyright True North Country Comics. Copyright 2018.